Let's play some cards.
From Harrah's St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, starring Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips with Paul Harrah's and the poker coach, Joe McGowan. I want to hold them like they do in Texas, please. Brought to you by Poker Stars, Reactor Watches, and the Poker Players Alliance.
You got to
know. Now, from the Harrah's St. Louis Poker Room, here are Dennis and Paul on 590 The Fan, KFNS.
Thank you, sir. May I have another?
In the midst of about 10 tables of live and tournament action here at Harrah's St. Louis, welcome to year number 2 of the final table.
And away we go.
This is our 53rd show, Dennis.
Wow.
And we are rolling along here, and happy to have you with us. Thanks for listening. I'm Paul Harrah's. He's Team Poker Stars pro Dennis Phillips. On the phone with us from the Poker Coach headquarters in Southern California, Joe McGowan. Happy anniversary to you, too, Joe. You've been there since the beginning as well.
Hey, thank you, Paul. Thanks very much. How's it going, Dennis?
Oh, not too bad. How's it feel to be a year old now?
It's creeping up fast.
Coming up on the show today, Nolan Dalla, who is the media director for the World Series of Poker, who wrote a very interesting piece for their website a couple of days ago called You Go Girl. It is about women-only poker tournaments. And the question is, in a world where anybody could sit down at any poker table and play any poker tournament as long as they are of legal age,
yep,
why do we have tournaments that are exclusively for women? And we'll also talk a little bit about the controversy of men who have entered women-only poker tournaments and won them,
yeah,
in the last few months. So Nolan will join us about that. Before we get to any of that, though, you've actually been in town for a few days. What's wrong?
Yeah, I know. Something must be happening here. I've got some sleep. I've been in town. I've actually got caught up with a few things.
But you're on a plane again tomorrow, aren't you?
Yeah, tomorrow morning I'm gone.
Where are you headed?
I have to go to Miami.
You have to go to Miami? I know there's no big poker tournament. What are you doing in Miami?
Well, actually, I'm playing a couple of celebrity games down there, doing some stuff on Media Row, that. And they got something going on Sunday, I don't know, over by the Dome.
You're kidding me. You're going to the Super Bowl again?
Yeah, I am. It's kind of neat, isn't it?
Are you going to hook up with the number one New Orleans Saints fans, poker player Darvin Moon?
Yes, I am. Yeah, I talked to him here a few days ago. He'll arrive down there on Thursday morning. We'll spend some time together. We'll go to the game. We'll have some fun.
He's got to be out of his mind with excitement for his home team, first time ever in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, and he's gone the last 3 or 4 games, wherever it's been at. And he says, you sit down and you suddenly realize you're sitting next to Ronnie Lott. And it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
Very, very cool.
Yeah. So he's having the time of his life right now.
All right. Well, before you do that, we've got an action-packed show today. I want to start off with something I saw that was interesting on Sunday night. We talk so much about the World Series of Poker. On Sunday night, ESPN kicked off their winter coverage of the WSOPE. That's the World Series of Poker Europe,
yep,
which, of course, took place several months ago but is now finally hitting TV. And it's got our friends Lon McCarron and Norman Chad as the commentators, as always. And before they get to the actual tournament coverage, they started off with a special event called the Caesars Cup, which is Europe versus the Americas. 8 players from Europe, like Patrick Antonius and Annette Oberstad and Dario Minieri and Gus Hansen and Peter Eastgate and several others, against the Americas, which included team captain Daniel Negreanu, Doyle Brunson, Jennifer Harmon, Phil Ivey, Huck Seed, Helmuth was in there. A pretty good lineup of players on both sides.
Oh, very, very good.
The European team, younger, but I think that's because the age scale is tilted way to the American side by Doyle. I think Doyle may actually be older than all the European players combined. But did either of you watch any of this on ESPN Sunday night?
I did not. How about you, Joe?
You know, I wish I knew that it was on, and I forgot to TiVo it because I didn't know it was coming up. I love that stuff. I totally would have watched it. I'll have to set my TiVo to catch a rerun.
Yeah, well, it's on Sunday nights now, and as I said, this Sunday they will start the regular tournament coverage. But let me tell you about the Caesars Cup, because it was an interesting format. At the beginning, you're playing 2-on-2 poker, And it's not like it's a four-handed game. It's a two-handed game where both teams have two players who both play the hand. So, for instance, if Dennis and I were on the same team, I would play the hand pre-flop. Then I'd slide the cards over to him, assuming we're going to see a flop. He would play the flop. And then if we get to a turn, he slides the cards back to me, and I play the turn, and then slide them back, and he plays the river. We're both playing from one chip stack, and the other team is playing from one chip stack. So you had matchups like, at the beginning, it was Phil Ivey and Huck Seed for the Americas against Patrick Antonius and Ilari Sahami, Zygmunt, for the Europeans. Where you ended up with Gus Hansen and Peter Eastgate for the Europeans versus Daniel Negreanu and Phil Hellmuth for the Americans. What do you think of a format like that?
I think they'd have to put a chair in between most of them, because I can just see Gus Hansen raising with a deuce seven and sliding the cards over and the guy kicking him in the leg or something. What the heck do you do this to me for?
Have you ever heard of anything like that, Joe?
How funny would that be to once you get the cards, they're like, what the heck are you doing? Like, to try to hide that on your face. What are you calling with? You calling to take it away after the flop? Or are you trying to hit something with this? You know, like, what was that?
There was one hand where Daniel and Phil Hellmuth were involved, and Hellmuth had to make the first action. And I think that this is when they were playing against Gus and Peter, who are both young, aggressive players. And, of course, Gus Hansen, I mean,
any two cards, I'm telling you.
This guy could have anything, absolutely. So Hellmuth has to make the decision first, and he plays a 9-8 off suit. But he actually gives a little bit of a speech after he's been raised by the Europeans, or maybe they opened with a raise. He actually gives a little bit of a speech. You know, I like this hand, and I also know that Daniel plays hands like this really well. So since I'm handing it off to him, I'm gonna call. And the announcers, both Lon and Norman, were saying, you've just given away your hand. You've essentially just told your opponents, we don't have a big pair. And I would think that was one of the biggest mistakes of the night. Hellmuth can't keep his mouth shut.
Now, wait, are you saying that Hellmuth got in trouble because of his mouth?
Yes.
Oh, okay. New.
And now during a tournament, Phil normally would not give information about his hand away, especially pre-flop.
Now, pre-flop he doesn't. You're absolutely right there. Afterwards, he does occasionally, and definitely if he's got to make a decision, he'll talk and talk and talk. But pre-flop, that's highly unusual for him, yes.
Well, it turned out I think the flop was something like 10-8 deuce, or I don't remember exactly what it was. They hit middle pair, and it ended up with Daniel getting in trouble, all because Phil had called pre-flop, and they lost a bunch of chips on that. And I think that's exactly the scenario you're talking about, one player getting the other player in trouble.
Yeah. Phil now has a bruise on his shin from Daniel, right?
Well, I would think so. Now, Joe, tell me about what it would be like to be one of those players. You talked about, you know, trying not to give away too much information. Now you got to read two opponents once they see the hand.
I think it's a pretty cool dynamic, too, because, you know, with Phil saying that, he's trying to give a reverse tell to have them think, hey, maybe he's got, like, pocket queens and he's slow playing a monster and Phil's running a reverse. Now you have to pick up the storyline of what the person just did, you know, so it's the both sides of it, which is kind of interesting. But yeah, I think it's a fun format. You know, I don't think I'd want to do that if it was me for a lot of money, you know. but it's definitely, I mean, would I love to go do that with you or Dennis somewhere, and, you know, $500 tournament or something, or $100 tournament just to go have fun on a weekend? I'd love to do something like that. I think it's
really cool. Absolutely. And the conversation, you'd have to have 15-minute breaks every hour, though, just to talk it over. You know,
right.
I mean, literally, what the heck were you thinking?
I also think, and you guys tell me what you think you would talk about here, what kind of strategy do you talk about ahead of time? Now, I will point out that these people didn't know who they were going to be paired up with until their captains made the decision. Annette Overstad for the Europeans, Daniel Negreanu for the Americans, deciding who would go up there and play. But you know what? When you put Doyle, Brunson, and Jen Harmon together on a team, these two have played against each other in the big game at the Bellagio so much, they know each other's game like the back of their hand. I don't think you have to talk much strategy.
No.
But I think other people who would get stuck together, they probably do have to talk a little bit of strategy.
You probably have to go over strategy on your opponents. You know, if you're playing Gus Hansen and, you know, maybe someone else that is notorious for running a lot of big bluffs, you know, you might have to go over strategy of how you're going to trap this guy or let him bluff off chips, or how you might have to show subtle weakness to induce the bluff. Or if you're playing against another player, you know, that's relatively tight, maybe like a Phil Hellmuth, who's pretty tight and tries to trap people, what's our strategy going to be, you know, playing this player and his partner? You know, so then probably a strategy like that.
I like the idea of some of the team captains could have had so much fun with this. I mean, can you imagine? Now, granted, they weren't on the same, but Dario with Doyle? Think on that a minute. Think on that, guys.
Those two styles don't mesh at all.
They're not in the same universe.
Yeah.
And I can just – there's no way Doyle would be able to keep a straight – well, knowing Doyle, he probably could. But I'd be amazed when he raises with his 6-4 offsuit and then passes the card to Doyle, and Doyle looks at him.
Yeah.
You know, what would his response be?
There was one point where where when it was Doyle and Annette versus – I'm sorry, Dario and Annette versus Doyle and Jen, each team at one point in that hand played a 10-deuce, which, of course, is the famous Doyle Brunson hand. He won two back-to-back WSOP main events with that hand. And for years after, would play that just because it was his hand.
Yep.
And, you know, maybe about 5 years ago said, I'm not playing that hand anymore. Well, at one point, Jennifer Harmon had that, called preflop with it. Then the kids raised, and she showed the cards to Doyle and said, I just don't play this as well as you do. And he laughed, and they mucked the cards.
Yep.
But again, that's knowing each other
knowing
how you're going to do it. I'll tell you where I see a practical application of this in the real world. Let's say you're going over to somebody's basement to play a home game.
Uh-huh.
You know, not a cash game, but a tournament. And there are thousands of these going on every day in America. 10 people, 9 people, they all get together. They're playing in somebody's basement. If you've ever gone to one of these, you know how it sucks to be one of the first people out. You want to get to be one of the last two or three, and obviously you want to win the thing. But if you get knocked out, now you got to sit around.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still going to talk and hang out with everybody, but you're not going to get to play cards for a while. With this format, the first 4 people who are knocked out, go play your own version of a Caesars Cup. Put $20 in the pot each, play 2-on-2, have a little fun with this sort of thing. I think that would be a great thing for home games.
I think this is a great reality show. Stop and think for a minute. You get 20 strangers, randomly draw them, throw them together, and mic them up.
Yeah.
So that if they're talking in front of the coffee machine in between times, some of the conversations would just be unbelievable, I would think.
There was one guy on the European team who had won an online qualifier. I don't know on what site he had done it, but he was a complete unknown, and he was in there playing with some European pro. I can't remember who that was. And they didn't play up his story all that much. But in the end, the Europeans won that match, and I think they're going to play best of 7, and they ended up winning 4 of the 7. I think it was something like 4-1.
Wow. Okay.
At the end, by the way, the first 4 matches were all 2-on-2, but then it went to heads-up matches, and Daniel very wisely for the heads-up match chose one of the best heads-up players in the world, Huck Seed.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be the guy you're going to want to put in there in that situation. I mean, he and Jesus Ferguson have crushed the NBC heads up.
Yeah, thanks for reminding me of that. I haven't got my draw yet, so we'll see.
Oh, Dennis is going to be playing in the NBC heads up on the weekend of March 5th, 6th, and 7th out at Caesars.
At Caesars.
Yeah. So hopefully you won't sit down in your first round against Huck Seed or
please not.
Chris Ferguson.
That would be nasty.
For that at all, Dennis, on PokerStars, is it all the heads up you can do?
Oh, every hour of the day I'm practice. Oh boy,
it's a reverse tell, Joe.
I'm glad you're not sitting next to me. You'd be able to read me like a book.
All right, we got to take a break here. When we come back, we're going to get to some reader email. We've also got some news about some tournament winners. I also want to give you details about the event that's coming here to Harrah's St. Louis, which is hosting its first ever World Series of Poker circuit event in the first 2 weeks in April. The satellites will start on April 1st, that's a Thursday, and then Friday, April 2nd, will be the first event, a $350 buy-in event in which we expect several hundred people to play. There will be no limit hold'em events every day at noon with buy-ins from $350 up to $550 up to $1,090 up to $1,500, and of course the main event will cap it off the last 3 days, April 13th, 14th, and 15th. That's a $5,000 buy-in. If you've never been to one of these, I talked about the one I was at in Tunica a couple of weeks ago. These are a lot of fun, and they bring in people from all over the region. We're expecting to have a pretty good crowd here because of the central location of St. Louis and so many cities that are just a few hours' drive away. We're looking forward to welcoming you to town. Dennis and I will be here for as much of it as we possibly can be. Even if you don't get into the noon tournaments because you're not a no-limit hold'em player, there are going to be 4 o'clock events every day with Limit Omaha 8 or better event and a Pot Limit Omaha 8 or better event and a 7-stud 8 or better event. There's regular limit hold'em. There's six-handed no limit. There'll be a horse event, and on and on and on. If you want to see the schedule, go to harrisstlouis.com. You get details on that, plus, of course, the 7 o'clock second chance events, which will be $200 buy-ins each evening. So people here in St. Louis who want to come after work can do that as well. harrisstlouis.com is the website to find out about St. Louis's first ever WSOP circuit event coming in April, played right here where we broadcast the final table. This is 5-9 of the Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.
Tuesday is poker day on 590 The Fan KFNS. So here are Dennis Phillips and Paul Harris at the final table, live from the poker room at Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel.
Nolan Dalla from the World Series of Poker will join us in about 10 or 15 minutes. But we've been promising that we would get to some of your listener email, and we will do that in just a moment. But first, this portion of the show is brought to you by PokerStars.net. That's the site where you can play against Team PokerStars pros like Dennis Phillips.
It absolutely is, and this PokerStars.net is growing by leaps and bounds. It is the world's largest poker site. It is now over 30 million members, and there are more free-to-play tables than any other sites. I'm telling you, PokerStars is the place to go to learn how to play and to practice your poker skills. Right now on PokerStars.net, there's 143,000 people playing there.
Wow.
As we speak. Unbelievable. I'm telling you guys, you want to learn this game. You want to learn it right. You want to learn how to play and to go prepare for the game here at Caesars. Go to PokerStars.net.
Here at Caesars.
Here
at Caesars. You're not in
okay.
Vegas yet, buddy.
Never mind. You got my mind confused. I'm easily confused, okay? All righty. A little senior moment there, guys. Sorry about that.
Here at Harris. St. Louis.
For the first 2 weeks of April, I'm telling you, get ready for it. Go on there. Practice these other games. There is no equal to it. 30 million members now. By far the largest and the best. I'm telling you, it's the world's largest site. It's free to download and play. It's got award-winning 24/7 support for you, and it's got the best software and the best game selection you can ever get. PokerStars.net.
There you go. We got an email from a listener named Stuart in Boston, and this is where we bring the poker coach Joe McGowan in for his thoughts on some of these hands that people have been sending us. And by the way, if you've got one, the email address is DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. And here's our first hand to discuss today, Joe. Stuart was playing in a 2-5 game, and he says, I had about $750 in front of me after starting with $500, and I was under the gun. I limped in with the 6 of hearts and 6 of diamonds. Two other people called. Before the big blind, raised to $20. I called, as did the two others. I put the big blind on a middle pair, like 8s or jacks or ace-king suited. Now there was $82 in the pot, and I had more than the two callers, but less than the big blind. Now, I know you always like to analyze these things street by street, so let's start right there. Limping in with a pair of sixes, and then it gets raised in a 2-5 game to $20, and he calls. Any problem with that, guys?
No, none whatsoever. You've got a potential here if you catch your set. It's a hand that's easy to get away from. Four-handed, 20, you got 3-1 on it. Usually the return on this, if you do catch a set, is pretty significant. I have no problem coming into that pot.
Joe?
Well, I think the first thing that I find is interesting, he mentioned that he had 750 after starting with 500. He may have just put that in for information for us, but a lot of people, they play thinking, okay, I'm up 200. I've had so many friends of mine and people tell me, well, I was up this amount, and I was playing this hand, and I knew I could fold there and still leave a winner. You know, and I wanted to book a win, and it affects how people play. I think in general, and again, not saying Stuart was doing this, but I do think it's interesting that he started with that he was up 750 after starting with 500. I think that should really hardly ever be part of your decision-making. I think it should be more the long-term picture. When you're playing poker and you have this hand, if you played it a million times, you know, what would happen and what would be, you know, the overall best thing for you. So not as much of this particular night, you're up 250, you're down this amount, you don't want to do this and you don't want to do that. I think you always just want to make the best decision. It's not like it's a tournament where you have 750 and it's relative to the blinds. It's a cash game. But I do like that he'd limp in under the gun, because if he raises, a lot of people might raise under the gun with a pair of sixes. And then to me, what a shame that, say, he raised to 20 or 25, two, three other people call, and now a guy in the small blind looks down at two kings. What's he going to do? You know, what's almost everybody going to do? Probably going to make it like 125. You know, probably going to try to protect your hand. Sometimes people overraise a little with the kings because they're afraid of the weak aces that limp in. So now they make it 125. Now you're first to act with the sixes. Now what are you going to do? You know, you're probably not getting the implied odds if you have, you know, 750 and these other guys have less than you. You probably have to let it go. But by limping in, you know, and then someone else calls, and now a guy looks down at two kings and he makes it 30, you know, or 25, even 40. You know, it would be a big raise from $5. You can call that to try to spike the six and try to win a big pot. So I like how he's playing it so far.
Yeah, a couple of points there, like you were saying. When he got up to the 750, I hate when somebody across here saying, oh, I'm playing with their money now, or oh, I'm free rolling now, or whatever the heck.
No, you're not.
No, that's if I have 750 sitting in front of me,
yeah.
I don't care what I started with, that's my 750.
Absolutely, just like when you're playing at a blackjack table. Well, I'm playing with the house money now. No, once they pushed it across the line to you, it became your money.
Correct. Right. So Joe's got a great point there. I hope everybody realizes it. That is your money. You're not playing it like a free roll or whatever and throwing it and suddenly change the way you play your hands and you play your cards.
But I do know plenty of people who, if they're down, will think to themselves, well, I got to play this hand because maybe I'll catch something and I'll get up.
It works both ways.
And,
absolutely.
And if you're up, you think to yourself, you know what, I'll play this and, you know, I can minimize my losses and still go home a winner, because that's, you know, there's some ego involved in that. Anyway, let's get to the flop here. He says the flop came 6-8-9, all clubs, giving me bottom set. The big blind bet out $80, basically a pot-sized bet. I considered making a substantial raise to 250 or 300, but I decided I would not know what to do if I was then re-raised by the big blind, as I might be playing against a bigger set or an already made flush. I would certainly have bet out if all the other players had substantially less money than I, as I would have played for $200 or $300, but I didn't want to play for my stack in this spot, so I laid it down. Was I too conservative? Now, that's all he has in his email, so we don't know what happened in the rest of the hand because, obviously, he was done with it there. But what do you think of making a lay down there on a three-club flop of 9-8-6? Joe?
Well, I do think it's too conservative. And I guess, you know, as you go forward, it kind of does show that he's kind of thinking of the money. So maybe the game might be a little big, you know, because really it's one buy-in. And sometimes, you know, that buy-in you should have, you know, if you talk about bankroll management, which may not be my strongest suit of exactly what is the best bankroll for certain size games and how much you should have. But it sounds like he's really trying to protect that money and playing a little scared. I mean, that's a pretty big hand. You know, you flop a set. Now, yeah, is that a bad board to flop a set? You know, if I flop that set, I'm thinking to myself, geez, man, every time I flop a darn set, it's come three clubs all connected, the straights, flushes. You know, I got the bottom set. You know, I wish I had pocket tens, and the flop came 10, 5, deuce, rainbow. That's the dream flop. Well, this is the opposite of flopping the set. So I can see how Stewart might be a little scared of it, but, you know, I think for sure I would pretty much go with this hand. Not loving it, you know, but I would think, you know, out of the million times that I said earlier, you're in this situation, you're going to be a winner a very high percentage of the time. And I wouldn't love it, you know, but I probably would go ahead and raise it there and protect my hand for sure. Because likely, you know, one of these other guys might have the ace of clubs, might have a king of clubs and call. The other guy could have two queens with no club or with the queen of clubs. I mean, there's the range of hands that these guys could have here is anything. Now, certainly, a guy could have pocket eights there, and now you're set over set, and you're really in bad shape. if the board pairs, of course, you still lose unless it's you hit your quads, which is extremely unlikely. But, you know, set over set, you know, it doesn't happen that much. You know, is this a spot where it could happen? Well, to me, if it is, I'm going to probably go broke here a lot. If I raise and I have an unbelievable read on the person, whoever re-raises me, whether it's one of the guys that limped in behind me and just called, or it's the original raiser actually flopped a set of eights or nines, and I have an amazing read, maybe I can make a amazing hero fold for the remainder of my money. But likely, I'm pretty much going to go with the hand. Dennis, what do you think?
Oh, there's no way I can lay that down at this time on it. And it's very, very dangerous to just call there, because then you're opening the door. You're giving 3-to-1 pot odds for anybody behind you who has a high club, who has possible straights, all sorts of other hands. So you're probably going to get some other limpers in there with you on it. I think you have to bite the bullet here and raise. I don't see how you can do any different on that.
Well, here's the thing about calling. Let's say you call the $80,
mm-hmm.
and the other two guys don't call. You fold. Now you got $240 in the pot,
mm-hmm.
and the turn is a blank, doesn't pair the board. Let's say it comes off with a deuce of hearts. Okay? Now, what's he going to do? He let out and you called. He's going to probably bet at least 150, maybe 175, maybe more. If he doesn't believe that you've got the flush, if he's not scared of you having the flush, he's probably going to lead out again. So now, are you going to call that bet? Because you already called 80, and now you're probably going to have to call off 150, maybe even 200 more. What if you just raised it there on the flop, represented the flush that he might not have? You might be able to take it down there and end the hand on the flop.
You do. What he's worried about is if you raise it there, they're going to get repopped back, and all of a sudden you're going to have to make a decision, do I commit all my money or not on it? That's what his worry was on it.
Right.
I do it a little bit of reverse, and again, I don't have a lot of information about the hand here, but this guy is raising in first position with the three clubs out there. He's not going to do that with a nut flush.
You mean he's betting out?
He's not going to do that with a nut flush, probably. More than likely, he's got some portion of it, and he's worried about the clubs, and that's why he's betting it out.
Or maybe he's got a pair of aces with the ace of clubs.
It's very possible. All sorts of hands could be there.
And he could have nothing. He could have ace-queen and just do a standard continuation bet that a lot of players
absolutely.
Do.
Because there's some, you know, yeah. He's in a position, and that's a danger flop. And so many people are going to lay it down unless they have a premium hand there.
Yep.
You know, if somebody has Jack 10, I don't know, something like that, he's got a straight draw, and he's got maybe even a flush draw and a straight draw, then he's going to call. But if the guy's got, you know, Queen King, if he's got Ace Jack, if he's got a pair of fours, if he's got whatever, they're going to lay all those hands down.
Mm-hmm.
You bet out the 80, you may be able to take it down. It's not a bad move in first position on it. You're representing it. It's sort of like the implied that you had here a couple of weeks ago that I loved. When you're talking about a heart comes on the river and you know he doesn't have a flush draw and there's three hearts there, and that's part of your outs, implied outs on it. Well, in this one, three clubs come out there. You can actually portray that you have the hand in first position. I love a move like that, especially if you have a tight image at the table. A lot of times you can take something down that way. I cannot see laying this down, though, with bottom set. I just can't see you doing it. And
I can't see
limping.
I mean, if you go broke here, Dennis, you go broke.
That's poker.
And it's not a tournament either. I mean, even a tournament, I definitely wouldn't lay it down. But the cash game, I just no way I'm going to lay this hand down.
Joe, did you say you definitely would lay it down in a tournament?
No, I wouldn't. I wouldn't lay it down there either. I'd go with the hand for sure in both.
I would be more likely to lay it down in a tournament than I would in a cash.
Why?
I would. Yeah. Because you're protecting the chips. I laid down bottom set in the World Series one time. They are so valuable, and this is such a draw-heavy flop out there, and especially depending on the caliber of player you're playing against. If you got two other people in it, and you have the set, and nobody else has another set, you may still only be 50% odds of winning it.
Yep.
Somebody has a straight draw, somebody has a flush draw, whatever it happens to be. So
you get the 10 outs twice if someone miracle has the flush. Or even if they hit the flush on the turn, you know, you can still pair the board on the river. But likely...
Yep.
You have the best hand. I mean, that, to me, likely, overall, you have the best hand a huge percentage of the time.
Huge, huge.
Okay, well, you know what? Since we bled over into it a little bit, tell us about how you play this in a tournament then. Do you just call, wait to see what happens behind you, wait to see what happens on the turn?
No, you can't. Not normally. Not in the position you're in. Normally there, even in a tournament, I would raise.
So under no circumstances, cash or tournament, are you just calling here?
Right. Not
it would have to be...
No way.
Yeah, it would have to be some huge read that I'm looking to my left and I see these guys are both ready to muck. I mean, something or other would have to give it away. Unless I saw something specific at the table to prevent me from doing it, no, I'm raising here.
Yeah, I'll tell you
one
of the reasons.
I can't think of any reason.
Exactly.
You know, another good reason, guys, that I like to raise here, because if another club comes and this guy has two aces without the ace of clubs, let's just assume the other two limpers are going to fold. Okay, so he bets the 80, and let's just say you just call and the other two guys fold. Now another club comes. The original raiser has two aces. It kills your action. You know, let's say he's got two red aces, and he thinks you just have ace-queen with the ace of clubs. He doesn't want to see the other club. I like getting the money in there. I got the best hand. Let me get the money in before the action gets killed, because so many times there could be a huge, huge pot, and then all of a sudden a bad card comes and both players are afraid of it, and you can't get any money in there. I've got the set. You know, yeah, I might be that unlucky where a guy has a set of eights or nines or maybe flop the flush for sure, but I'm going to go with the hand, and I want to put more money in there right there. And if I lose it, you know, I got coolered, and I'm going to rebuy. Dennis makes a great point. You can't rebuy the chips in the tournament. They're more valuable. Cash game, I just break out another five. I mean, you know, I got to rebuy in again. If you can't really rebuy in again, the game's probably a little too big. Maybe play a little smaller, which absolutely is nothing wrong with that, but that's a little more bankroll management.
Yep, and here's one other thing. Let's say that you do just call there. Two players behind you, the fourth guy in, who was really the second limper, who's to say he doesn't have 9-8? I know lots of players who in that situation would be playing suited connectors. He might have the 9 and 8 of diamonds. Now, he's flopped top two pair.
Yep.
You've got bottom set, and you want the board to pair. The board pairs, you lose your stack, unless it's that fourth six, as Joe pointed out before.
Right.
So, I mean, there are
7-10. You know, there are straights out there, 5-7.
Sure, sure.
You know, someone could easily just have, like, a straight draw with a pair. You could have 7-8.
Yep.
So that's even more reason, though, why you want to raise, because the other guys behind you might have a pair and a straight draw. So easy to have 9-10, top pair with a gutter ball, you know, or you know, 7-8 or 6-7, you know, open-ended with a pair. So you want to protect against that. You know, so you definitely got to raise it. And you really, folding is just too, maybe not scared money, but just too conservative. In the long run, I think you're going to lose money if you're folding these hands. I feel like some people are probably laughing maybe at me for this one, because I should be a little more adamant that you really can't probably fold this hand unless you have, like Dennis was leading to and I was, you have an unbelievable read that somehow you're beat. It would be like a hero fold. I mean, like an amazing fold to me.
Gotcha.
You
know,
Actually, knowing me, I could have the hero read and still call.
All right, Stuart, thank you very much for sending us that hand. We love analyzing them. We don't pick on you, you know, but we find these situations that every poker player has found themselves in.
Yep.
All of us have been in this situation, and none of the three of us are saying we would do exactly the right thing in this situation.
Right.
But we recognize it, and after the fact, we love to be able to talk about it. So thank you for sending that. If you've got a hand for us to analyze, DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com is the address, and I promise we will try to get to much more email in the weeks to come as we start off year two of the Final Table. We'll take a break, and Nolan Dalla from the World Series of Poker will join us to talk about women-only poker tournaments and the men who win them. When we come back, live from Harris, St. Louis, here on 590 The Fan, KFNS and KFNS.com, and our podcast available on iTunes and on Dennis's website, thechipleader.com.
From Harris St. Louis Casino and Hotel, this is The Final Table, the only show in St. Louis with a poker millionaire. That's Dennis Phillips and his co-host Paul Harris on 590 The Fan KFNS.
Welcome back to table number two in Harris St. Louis World Series of Poker Room. And here's a guy who long has been associated with the World Series of Poker. He is now their media director and become a friend of ours over the last few years
Absolutely.
As well. Nolan Dalla, welcome back to the Final Table.
Thanks very much, gentlemen. Nice to be with you. I think this is the third or fourth time I've been on there in St. Louis. And, Paul, Dennis, it's great to talk to you again.
Well, thank you for helping us to kick off year number two of our radio show. The reason we wanted you on here today is because of a piece you wrote on the WSOP website a few days ago called You Go Girl, which is about women-only poker tournaments. And I think the basic question here is, in a world where anybody can sit down at a poker table, as long as they're of legal age, their gender doesn't matter, their race doesn't matter, there are no limits on who can sit down and play, why do we still need to have, as the WSOP has, tournaments that are only open to women?
Well, that's really a fair question, and I think that there is a division of opinion on the need for women's only poker tournaments. I think most of us would agree, and certainly a lot of ladies would agree, that they don't need special circumstances or special privileges or anything else. They certainly can compete alongside men, and that's been proven by a lot of very talented female champions that have played at the World Series and other tournaments and done quite well. However, I clearly think that the numbers show that there is a demand for ladies-only poker tournaments and seniors events and things like that. So those two events have been part of the World Series for the better part of 20 or 30 years now, and the one reason that I wrote about this recently is because I think that there's I know that there's a threat to these tournaments now. There's certainly, we had someone in November at the World Series of Poker Circuit event in Lake Tahoe, Harvey's Lake Tahoe, that a gentleman entered and actually won for the first time, won a World Series of Poker Circuit event that was a ladies' championship. Now, we meaning the World Series and Harrah's, weren't going to bar or ban prohibit men from playing in the event, but it was I thought it was a dangerous precedent in the sense that the floodgates can now open where men rightly or wrongly perceive ladies events as being weaker fields and they could conceivably invade these tournaments and essentially destroy them. I think that would be bad for the game. I think that we have to put down the gauntlet now, and that's the reason I came out and very vocally lended my voice as support for women's only tournaments.
I kind of agree with you on that. I'm just trying to figure out how we can promote the women without offending any of them. I've played with Kathy Liebert. I've played with Annie Duke. I've played with – they need no help, let me tell you. They are an equal par and ahead of 99% of the men out there.
Do they find the concept of a women's-only event patronizing in some way?
Actually, some of them do. Maybe they see the need for it, but they not necessarily enjoy it. There shouldn't have to be a need for it. This is what it takes to get other women playing – Then I suppose it's something we have to do. But I don't like the idea of it even, particularly.
Nolan, when you talk to some of these top female pros, how do they feel about women-only events?
Well, again, I heard what Dennis said, and I see his point of view. But, again, women's tournaments are not for the Kathy Lieberts and the Annie Dukes and the Jennifer Harmons. These ladies' tournaments are designed – well, they're designed for any female, obviously, but by and large, most of the ladies who come will fly to Las Vegas specifically to play in this event. I'm talking about the Ladies World Championship every year, and they're not professionals. And again, the numbers do not lie. When Harrah's Entertainment took over the World Series of Poker in 2004, there were 200 ladies that entered that year. That was only 6 years ago. Last year, we had over 1,000 ladies. That's five times the number. So there's clearly a lot of ladies that come from all over the world to play in this event, and they are not professionals. Again, keep in mind the World Series is a tournament that tries to open its doors to as many people and as many new potential players as possible. I think ladies' tournaments happen to be one of those on-ramps that induces what I would consider an underrepresented demographic in our game into poker, and I think it does convert them to becoming full-time poker players, which I think is something we all want.
So is this similar then to your senior tournament out there?
I think the seniors is a little different, Dennis. I think you'd agree with that. And in the sense that a lot of the seniors that play, and you have to be over 50 years old to enter the seniors competition, most of the seniors are established veteran poker players. I think we'd agree with that. It's not as though, a 65-year-old person starts playing poker, although we've had some cases where that's true. I think ladies and seniors are a little bit different. But they are similar in the sense of some people find them discriminatory or they think that maybe there's not a need for them. And that's a fair debate to have. I'm just saying that the World Series of Poker is in the business of providing as many tournaments and opportunities to as many players as possible. I think it'd be a shame to lose either of those two events.
So, Nolan, why not have a rule that says in a women's only event, you have to actually be a woman. How did this guy get in Lake Tahoe? And we've heard of events in Atlantic City, too.
Unfortunately, we live in a litigious society. This is you know, there are lawsuits about everything now, and I don't think that's a good thing. I think this is just a matter of common sense. I mean, it's not as though there's a shortage of tournaments that we can all play and enter. But this particular gentleman, just real quick, he had no agenda. He wasn't a bad person in the sense that he came to this event with the intent to crash the party. Essentially, he drove 2 hours from his home in Northern California, came up to Lake Tahoe, and he said, "Oh my goodness, I didn't realize the only tournament this day is the ladies' event." And he said, "Well, you know, I really drove 2 hours. It's my only day off." So he enters it and wins it. But he didn't have any nefarious agenda here. He was actually very nice, and the ladies were actually very nice to him. But again, the fear that I have is that more men will see this, see an opportunity to crash the party, and ultimately destroy the event. And I don't want to see that happen.
Well, no, nobody wants to see that. And frankly, anything that can promote the game of poker and the no limit, I'm for. So I'm not necessarily against this at all. I guess what it is I hate to have it. Maybe that's the way I'm doing it.
Well, Dennis, again, how can you argue with the numbers? Over 1,000
exactly,
ladies
that's
entered
what I'm
last
saying.
Year. I think the year before there were 1,100. I mean, if these events were getting a trickle of participation, you know, 150, 200, something like that, I think you'd make a fair point. Like, why have them? Nobody seems to care about them. There's over 1,000 people entering these. And that's, mm-hmm. and again, I think that you if you walk through that room and you look at the faces and the ladies who do enjoy themselves, by the way, these events are quite different than the regular, you know, run-of-the-mill open tournament. There seems to be a little more camaraderie. A lot more, talking, and people seem to enjoy more the social element of these tournaments. I think that's a fact, and I've only worked 30 or 40 of them, so I think I can say with some authority. And over 1,000 showing up. How can you deny those people the opportunity to play an event that they seem to enjoy? I think that again, I work for Harrah's Entertainment. I work for the World Series of Poker. We have an obligation to meet that market demand, and that's what we're doing.
What kind of participation is there by women in the non-women's only events? In other words, the events that are open to everybody, from the main event all the way down to the circuit events like the ones we're going to have here in St. Louis in April.
Yeah, see, Paul, that's a serious concern that I have. I think a lot of people that are listening to the radio show right now remember the poker boom that occurred basically 2003, 4, and 5. And, you know, essentially the game grew, you know, doubled in size every 3 or 4 months. I mean, you know, we used to have a couple hundred in tournaments. Now we're having thousands of players that enter tournaments, and online poker is even bigger. But as poker has grown, unfortunately, ladies' participation in poker has not grown. I walk the floor of the World Series again, and I head count, you know, certain things. In one of those categories is ladies. 3 to 4% of the World Series field overall, that's roughly the count, 3 to 4% is female. That is an abomination. This is a game that should be 50-50. I think women actually are, you know, there's actually slightly more women in society than men. So I don't think we'll ever get to the 50-50 breakdown. But, you know, shouldn't it be 80-20 or maybe 75-25, something like that? It is a disgrace that we don't have more women in poker. I think most of us agree that it's a good thing. They can participate, you know, on an equal playing field with men. One of the few sports where that's possible. And again, to have 3 to 4% participation shows somebody out there, maybe all of us, are doing something very wrong. And I think ladies' tournaments are one small way to rectify that underrepresentation.
Okay, well, you've just floored me. 3 to 4%. I should know better than to ever argue with Nolan. I'm telling you, I should know better than to ever do that. He's been doing this for 20 years. He just. Wow, 3 to 4%. Okay, now how can I help promote the ladies' tournament?
Don't enter them.
Well, you know, again, I don't think that, you know, we have to all go out in a march and you know, it's not that kind of movement. But I do think that what I've asked men to do, and again, we are the majority of players in the game, is just to respect the ladies' tournament and voluntarily not participate. There's going to be some people out there, you know, and I've seen it, that you know, will say, well, you know, why do they have a special tournament? And, you know, and then that gets into all kinds of, you know, debates about, discrimination and all that. And nobody's for that. I mean, but it's a matter of common sense here. And I just think that men, hopefully, you know, if somebody out there was listening to this thinking that they could come to the ladies' tournament in St. Louis, which is coming up in April, and think they could come in and crash the party, think again. Respect the event. These ladies, you know, in many cases, drive long distances, want to come in and play. Respect the game. Respect what they want to do. And that's all I ask.
Yep. And by the way, that ladies' event, when Harrah's St. Louis hosts the WSOP circuit in April, the ladies' event will be on Sunday, April 11th, the day before or 2 days before the main event, the championship event starts here. And by the way, there will also be a seniors' No Limit Hold'em event the week before, the Sunday, April 4th. So lots of opportunities for lots of people to play. And by the way, in all sorts of games as well. And if you think that the women who are entering women's only events aren't really that good, Vanessa Russo just won the women's event at the PCA in the Bahamas just a couple of weeks ago, and she's among the best new women and new female players over the last few years.
No, she's among the best players.
Yes, she is.
In the last
female
few years.
Or otherwise.
Exactly.
Absolutely right. Nolan, I hope that when the circuit event comes here, I hope you come to town as well. I know that there are always representatives from WSOP headquarters who make the trips, and I hope that April is on your itinerary.
Hey, Paul, thanks so much for your kind words. Dennis, it's nice visiting with you again, and thanks again for all you gentlemen do to promote poker in the World Series there in the heartland of America.
Thank you very much. Nolan Dalla, media director for the World Series of Poker, joining us here at the final table on 590 The Fan, KFNS, and KFNS.com. Don't forget our podcasts are available on iTunes, and you can also download them from Dennis's website, thechipleader.com. As I mentioned at the top of the show, this is our 53rd show, which means you've got a year of podcasts to go back and listen to, and I guess now three or four of those have Nolan on them. Before we finish things up here today with the three of us, Joe McGowan, the poker coach, the third member of our team, let's get to a couple of other things, including word out of the Beau Rivage in Biloxi, where I was just playing a few weeks ago in the Southern Poker Championship. I played one of the first events. Congratulations to Hoyt Corkins,
yes,
who won the last event, the main event, almost $750,000. He outlasted a field of 208 people to take the second WPT title of his career. Lifetime winnings now after 14 caches, 6 final tables, and 2 championships, now over $5 million. And a name that you don't hear that often. You would see him every once in a while on WPT or the WSOP, but his name is not thrown around that often, but he's a damn good poker player. You've played against him, haven't
played
you?
Played with him a number of times, a number of places. Played with him in several charity tournaments, too. He's a really good guy and a very, very solid player. I think Joe played with him, actually the 5 Diamond. He made the final table out there last year.
Is that right, Joe?
Yeah, we played at the final table together
last December.
He's unquestionably a great, great player. You know, some people that are in the business knock him a little bit, that he's a touch of a one-trick pony. He does the all-in move a lot, which he definitely does. But, you know, in his defense, it's a skillful move, and his timing with it is very, very good. It's aggravating being one of his opponents when all of a sudden you're faced with one of his all-ins and you really can't call. So the all-in move is a great play, and he's unquestionably a very, very good player.
Well, the all-in play puts a tremendous amount of pressure on your opponent. It's what it does.
Right.
And it's what it's intended to do, and many times you can't respond to it.
Speaking of tournaments, this Saturday in Las Vegas, we have listeners all over the place, so I mentioned events that go on in other cities as well. The Hard Rock Hotel and Casino is going to host the first annual Trash Talk Championship of the World. Now, I've told you that I played at the Hard Rock in their Tuesday night Trash Talk Tuesdays game, which is a 2-5 cash game with a mandatory button straddle of $10 to $100, and almost everybody does it for $10, except for the drunk Englishman who was there the night I played, who made it $100 every time and surprisingly didn't go home with any money.
Really?
But they also have the 7-deuce prop going on for that. I don't know if all of that will be going on during this event this weekend, but it's this Saturday, February 6th. They'll do an auction in the afternoon, and then the event will go on in the evening. And if you're anywhere near Las Vegas, contact the Hard Rock and get details on that. The Trash Talk Championship of the World.
Do you have the phone number for that Englishman?
No. Okay. No, I don't. You know what? After how badly he played, he may not be able to afford a phone anymore. By the way, at the Trash Talk Tuesday events, the dealers can trash talk the players, too.
Oh, now they gotta love that.
Particularly with locals, they do give it back to some of them. Although I think you have to be careful if you're a dealer because you do work for tips.
Well, this is true.
So you gotta keep that in mind. All right, we're all out of time for today. Remember, if you've got a hand you want us to analyze on a future show, or any comments on the show or anything else, go to DennisPhillipsPoker@gmail.com. That's the email address, and we'll try to get to your email on a future show. Dennis is off to the Super Bowl. He'll have stories about that next week. For Dennis Phillips and Joe McGowan, I'm Paul Harris. This is the Final Table on 590 The Fan KFNS and KFNS.com.